Good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Melanie C. and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater and I'm in Wilsonville, Oregon. Today is Tuesday, June 11th, 2019, and this is a 10 a.m. Eastern Time Big Book Study meeting. Today we are reading from the Big Book and we are in the chapter More About Alcoholism on page 32, unpacking paragraph 1 today, which begins with, though there is no way of proving it, and ends with, here is one. Today's readers are the 12 steps, Nan K., the 12 traditions, John K. reading the text today, Elaine T. and Cindy D. Newcomer greeter is Wendy B., and the announcements will be given by Leslie M. Thank you for your service today. The share ID numbers for yesterday's 10 a.m. Eastern Time Big Book Study meeting is 13017, 13,017, and that would be for Monday, June 10th, 2019. And then today, the 7 a.m. Eastern Time Big Book Study meeting, Tuesday, June 11th, 2019, 13020, 13,020. The OA preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. Our fifth tradition states each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I will now ask Nan K. to please read the 12 steps of OA.
Good morning. My name is Nan K. from Northern Michigan. Here are the 12 steps. Number one, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Ten, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for the knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you for letting me share, and I pass.
Thanks so much, Nan K. I will now ask John K. to read the 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous.
Good morning, John Kiernan, recovered compulsive eater in Los Angeles. The 12 traditions. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. Four, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. Six, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. Seven, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. And I pass.
Thank you, John K. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share in what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you're done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to remute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting and a clear recording, everyone's phone except the speakers should be muted, and that would include for sure making sure that you're pressing star 1 rather than the mute on your own particular phone. And if everyone comes, please press star 1, that would be great right now. Today we resume our study of the Big Book. We're in this chapter more about alcoholism. We're on page 32. We're going to unpack paragraph 1 today, though there are no way of proving it, and ends with here is one. And to start us up and open up that discussion today will be Elaine T. Good morning, Elaine T.
Good morning, Melanie. Good morning, everyone. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And though there is no way of proving it, we believe that early in our drinking careers, most of us could have stopped drinking. But the difficulty is that few alcoholics have enough desire to stop while there is yet time. We have heard of a few instances where people who show definite signs of alcoholism were able to stop for a long period because of an overpowering desire to do so. Here is one. Wow, I started eating so early that I'm not sure if it was possible to have stopped. And certainly as a child, I didn't want to stop. I recall being told that I stole my brother's baby bottle when I was 4 and he was almost 1. So that's pretty early to start eating. I also recall, doing the kinds of things most of us did, getting into wherever mom had the stash of food. We had 5 kids in my family, not a lot of money. So she would hide, weak desserts for our school lunches. And I would always manage to find them. And I would do all the fun things like eat from the bottom of the ice cream container, hoping no one would notice, that sort of stuff. I didn't want to stop. The first time I recall even trying to stop, I was probably in my early teens, like 12, 13, and I could not diet for a day. I could hardly make it from one meal to the next. And I immediately thought, well, that's it. That's not how I'm going to be. And it was until I was 40 and what came into this program to deal with some emotional issues that I found, that I was a real compulsive overeater. And I had immediate pink cloud recovery that lasted several years. And I think during that time, maybe it was because of I had a desire to stop because the food plan I was put on had nothing to do with program. It only had to do with calories and that sort of thing. But I knew that sugar was a problem for me. So I pretty much stayed away from it. And that might have helped with those first 8 or so years. And then, of course, because I was still ingesting my alcoholic substances, I relapsed. But
hi, this is Ron in Wisconsin, and I'd just like to tell you my little story.
And I'm grateful today that I came back. Well, I never left program, but I refound.
I always noticed that I had extremely large genitalia. My penis was always a lot bigger than the other children, and by the time.
And so I was.
Imagine it. I was a 12-year-old in the end with a 12-year-old penis hanging down this fucking subway foot long.
That I'm able to, that I have neutrality around food as a result of this program. And that is a big, incredible gift. Even today, there are times when I feel like I don't have the desire to stop, and I have the opportunity to reach out to other members of program, pray to my higher power for willingness, because I want an easy life. I want, no trouble, no waves, no difficulties, no work, And I have to say, being retired is a wonderful gift.
Because
now I don't even have to go to work. And thank you. With that, I'll pass.
Thanks so much, Elaine T. Appreciate it. The lines are now open for additional comments of experience, strength, and hope on paragraph 1, page 32 of your big book. Please give the first name and the first initial of your last name.
Judy P.
Judy P.
John K.
John K.
Roz G.
Roz G.
Freedom H.
Sheila O.
Freedom H. And Sheila, did I hear Sheila O?
Yes.
Robin
L. Robin. I'm going to take Robin and we'll get around to the next line. Okay, here's what I got. Judy P., John K., Roz G., Freedom H., Sheila O., and Robin P. Hi, Judy. You're up now. And then John will come after you.
Thank you so much, Judy, compulsive overeater from Central New Jersey. And I always love this line when they talk about crossing over. And, like many, I was a compulsive overeater from, I don't know when, I assume day one. I don't remember a time when I never was, but there was a time when I crossed over and eating was fun. I mean, I still had a lot of hang-ups and all that, but it was fun. And I distinctly remember when I crossed over, and it was probably my early 20s, and this is going, my parents sent me to diet camp 9 summers in a row, 2 months a summer, so dieting was just a way of life for me. But I remember my early 20s when I did cross over, when I got so morbidly obese, I stopped going out of the house for 2 years because I was terrified for people to see how big I was. And I could not go back to when it was just fun. And I think about that also in my first relapse, that, abstinence was fun. Program was fun. All the weight loss was fun until my food got sloppy, which is of course code for I lost my abstinence, but I love when people share. I just redefined my abstinence, lowered the bar, made it all acceptable, until I crossed that line again where I could not maybe pull it back and get good the next day, and I proceeded to gain back all the weight I lost. Plus, of course, I think I lost 145 pounds the first time and came back 160. So I'm so aware of that today. Grateful that God somehow, some way has this love and forgiveness in his heart that I don't even understand, that after 2 huge relapses, that he has blessed me with the most amazing recovery for the past 6.5 years. I don't even understand that kind of love and forgiveness. And I just pray. Thank you very much, and I'll pass.
Thanks so much, Judy P. John K., you're up now, and then Roz D. will come in after you.
Good morning, Melanie. John Kiernan, recovered compulsive eater in Los Angeles. I'm not going to belabor this because I think I've spoken about it a lot, but I might have the kind of brain that appreciates hearing things that then turn out to be scientifically proven later. You know, this book was written in 1935 by a bunch of drunks who didn't have a lot of scientific background, but they put in here, though there's no way of proving it, we, you know, have found most of us could stop drinking. Well, you know what? Now they can prove it. There is actually an enzyme called alcohol dehydrogenase, which burns out in the human who drinks too much. And I'm only mentioning that only being partially because I'm back in school getting my alcohol and drug counseling certificate. But I appreciate the fact that we find out more and more and more about addiction as we go along, and that the things that were said then have proven out, and the things that haven't been absolutely proven are more bolstered every day. You know, in the early days, there was a lot of talk, you know, about sugar and flour, and nobody could exactly prove it well, and then they find out about the glycemic index and all that stuff. All that having been said, you know, knowledge of our disease alone is not going to cure us. It just makes me, it helps bolster the things, because if they're right about that, they're probably right about all the other things they say in here, and that, you know, the number one being, I can't do this myself. I need a power greater than myself that can help me with my problem. But, you know, I thought back on my childhood, and I go, wow, if I wasn't a compulsive eater from the get-go, it was really close, you know. There's a lady I'm friends with from the San Francisco Bay Area who's is in both programs, both A and OA, and she's also written on nutrition. She's got an advanced degree, and she says she believes most alcoholics are susceptible to alcohol, to sugar. And I had two alcoholic parents, so I always wonder, was some of those genetic things passed down? I think all kids can be really almost considered compulsive eaters, especially when it deals with sweets, because we're all into that really early, no matter what you are. But I know at a certain point, I went from eating because I liked the taste, it helped me feel better, because I was in a chaotic household, and I was that. And that, to me, is the big difference. A lot of people like a lot of the same foods taste-wise that we do, but we do it because we're trying to deal with the emotions. And this is all we know, and this is what helps us. And to me, that's what lets me know I'm bodily and mentally different from my fellows, you know. The other thing I'll tell you is OA screws up your eating. If you're here, you've been going to meetings, been listening to this, forget it. It's over. You're never going to be able to eat the same way. My friend Sheila J. has a great line. She says, the battle is over, and you lost. And it really is true, because I couldn't, even in the middle of my relapse, I think the worst part of my relapse was I knew better then. You know, early before I came to OA, I don't think I was oblivious. I didn't like the effect. I didn't like, you know, getting weight, but I didn't realize. And now I do. And like I said, the battle's over. You've lost, but don't worry. There is a solution, and we're talking about it. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, John K. Roz G., you're up next, and then Freedom H. will follow you. Hi, Roz.
Hi, Melanie. Hi, my name's Roz G. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater in Palmdale, California. And I was looking over this showing signs of alcoholism, or for me, of course, compulsive overeating. I'm really grateful that I did a food history of my life, because the more I recover, the more I see that I showed early signs of compulsive overeating as a little girl. And I was very thin, very thin. I, you know, chicken legs, I got called and stuff. And you're so thin. You know, you should eat a little more. And there's a couple of things I think, if you hear my dog panting in the background, it's him. I think of, you know, when I was a little girl, my mom and dad would make these beautiful barbecues, and all I wanted to eat was Chef Boyardee SpaghettiOs out of the can, because I just loved the way they made me feel. And I remember, you know, we had a pantry in the kitchen, and I would open the pantry and want to go for the cookies, and my mom would say, you have to wait till you're after dinner. And, you know, I grew up in the early 70s, and I was taught not to ever talk back to my mom. But in my head, I was so angry that she wouldn't allow me to have cookies. And those things showed me that I had signs that I was a compulsive overeater, and that certain foods did something for me. And the desire for me, of course, came on later in my later 20s when the weight started coming on. And I didn't like that. And I was in a comedy group and you had to be thin. And then the diet started coming and the insanity. And yeah, I had overpowering desires to lose weight, but the food won every time. I love what I heard in the other one of the other share. You lost. And I lost, but you know, I don't have to fight that battle. If I want to fight that battle, I'm going to lose. I don't want to get in the cage with the gorilla because the gorilla is going to win. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Roz. Now we're looking at Freedom 8, and then Sheila O will come in after.
Thank you for all those who do service. In my early addiction and when I was younger, I believe I started at 5 years old overeating, even though I was skinny until I was about 13. I feel like I had a conditional love, so I was looking for unconditional love. And for some reason, I remember thinking to myself that I would die if I did not eat, like, a lot of food. I thought it was like eating to save my life or something. I had this fear. I remember thinking to myself when someone would mention like a diet or like a, when someone would mention something about losing weight, this fear would come over me that I couldn't understand that I didn't have to eat all this food. And I don't know where that came from, but now thankful to this program, and thankful for the 12-step program of OA and listening to people, I realize now that I can eat healthy food and that it's okay and that I'm going to be okay and that this big scary thing that I had when I was younger is not this monster anymore, that I can actually succeed. And I am succeeding with the help of my higher power, who I call God. And I'm very thankful for this OA meeting and everyone in it. Thank you, and I'll mute.
Thanks so much, Freedom H. Sheila O, you're up next. And then after Sheila shares, we'll be Robin P. And then we'll open it up again for additional shares. Good morning, Sheila.
Hi, this is Sheila O. Thank you so much. This is the first time that I've shared on the line. 3 weeks ago, I was desperate, and I came to the meeting, and I got a sponsor on the same day, and so I'm doing very well, and I thank God for that, but I wanted to share that I could have stopped when I was younger or tried to. I had severe allergies, asthma, and eczema, and on Easter Sunday, 1989, I was working as a nurse. And they had set out the whole buffet for the staff that had to work. And I picked up a brownie and found out that it had peanut butter in it and became violently ill within a few minutes. And waited for my husband to pick me up. The other nurse I was working with wasn't thinking. I wasn't thinking. And after a few minutes, you don't keep your thoughts straight. But we did make it to the hospital, and I went into anaphylactic shock. And but for the grace of God, they were able to, they didn't have to do the trach and all that, but I just know it was not my time. But through the team of people that were working on me, they pulled me out of it, and I know that it was the powerful, I was sitting up straight, and the power of the wind just knocked me over straight. I had my uniform on. My husband was on my side. And this team brought me back to life. The point of the story is that even then, it was only within 8 weeks that I was picking through a box of chocolates to figure out which ones did not have nuts in them, so I would not get sick. And my behavior as a food addict and compulsive overeater is so fatal to me that even though I have that fatal reaction and I carry an EpiPen, I'm one that talks, I continued my behaviors on and off for the next few, many generations, many years in Overeaters Anonymous. And I'm 77 years old now, and this is the time that God has chosen for me to listen to the visions for you. And I have a lot of health problems. I can't go to meetings anymore. But I hear you, and I listen to you for 3 hours every day, and I'm abstinent. And I just want to thank you all for your service and everything you've done for me, listening to your voices. And thank my higher power for never giving up. Thank you. With that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Sheila O. Robin P. is up now, but just for a reminder, because there's only 3 more minutes and the lines will be open. We're on page 32 of the big book in the chapter, More About Alcoholism, paragraph 1, though there is no way of proving it. But for now, we're going to listen to Robin P.'s share. Good morning, Robin.
Good morning, Mel. Thank you so much. God bless everybody in your recoveries. I love this program so much. I'm Robin P. I'm a graceful, recovered, compulsive overeater in Vero Beach, Florida. And I wasn't one of those people that this paragraph talked about, you know, able to stop for a long period because of an overpowering desire to do so. I desperately wanted to be one of those people, but I was like Russian roulette the second that I, you know, that allergy and addiction going hand in hand, what I craved, I was just allergic to, and the physical, emotional, and spiritual debacle for me of the disease in action was that I had no willpower. I had no defense against that first fight without this program and without my higher power, without the steps and without this program in action. And I'm so grateful for this program because I spent years of my life with my head, you know, in the bowl or starving or just obsessing. Or I think someone needs to mute whoever that is. If you could just mute, that'd be awesome. But some of you wrestling papers or something. But anyway, thank you. And it's been just such a miracle for me to see the difference. You know, I have my meals and then I have my life. And instead of losing all that time to obsession and the allergy and addiction and the hangovers, oh my gosh, the sugar hangovers. You know, sugar for me was a sweet drug, and I'd experienced the hangovers. And today to live free from that demon, and also gluten for me. I'm a vegan. I've just gotten really, like, more and more refined. You know, I don't like gluten for my body, and it doesn't feel good in my body. And so I just get to listen to God and to myself, and it's been such a process. And to me, the most important thing is that I don't binge, I don't vomit, I don't starve. That's my bottom line. And then I just eat my meals and live my life with God. And I'm so grateful because the opposite was true before. And as a kid, food was my prize, my denial system, my mechanism for everything's okay in this abusive home because I have food, you know. And to now, everything's okay because I get to turn my will and my life over to the care of God. And I get to pray only for knowledge of his will for me and the power to carry that out. And I know without this program, I would not be one of those people who could hang on for years. So thank you. God bless everybody in your recovery. It's with that I pass.
Thank you, Robin P. The lines are now open to comment on paragraph 1, page 32. First name, first initial, your last name, please.
Beatrice
Lisa
O.
J.R. Lisa J.R. Beatrice O. Lance L.
Nancy L.
Nancy L. Elizabeth
Maureen
J. Elizabeth J., is that what it is?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And then I heard Maureen S. Let's go with that group and see where time goes after that, okay? Thanks so much. And so this is what I have. I have Lisa J.R., and then Beatrice O., Lance L., Nancy L., Elizabeth J., and Maureen S. Hi, Lisa. Good morning to you.
Hi, Melanie, and good morning, everybody. Lisa J.R. from Baltimore, Maryland. Grateful that somebody's on the dash today. Thank you, Dashboard Diva, and everybody. That invisible line, you know, I was growing up in denial, I think. You know, whether I had this disease from the beginning or not is really not important. The fact is I have it. Spent most of my life exercising for a living. I galloped racehorses, and bulimia was a lifestyle. So I was in denial pretty much most of my life till, you know, the wee end of the solution working for me, when I broke my feet and couldn't walk and couldn't run anymore. Boy, did I say, oh my God, oh, what am I going to do, when I realized it was smacking me in the face that I had crossed that invisible line and I was helpless and I was hopeless. In a short period of time, I tried every diet under the sun, every weigh and pay, every food program. I would order food and I would be through the meal before, or the day's worth of meals, by 10 o'clock in the morning. I would have eaten everything that I was supposed to eat for the day and then into the next day. I was hopeless. I really relate to what's been said, because there was no time in my life that I can relate to being able to curb my appetite. I was always prideful, always full of myself when people said, gee, you eat like a lumberjack, where are you putting it all? Little did they know I was up at 3 o'clock in the morning going running with plastic bags on. Little did they know, and I didn't even really know that was my solution. But thank God I found this program, and I found you wonderful people studying this book. Because I floundered in the rooms of OA for years, listening to people telling me about food plans. Well, this is just another diet, because, you know, if I have to do this, and this, after all, it's the other side of the coin. Aren't I dieting again? But it wasn't until I met you guys and cracked open the big book that I realized that there was a solution I could live with, that I could do. I wasn't hopeless anymore for the first time in my life, and I crawled into this program, you know, in my 50s. So if you're here before, you know, you become on the other side of aging, you know, the midlife, just count yourself blessed. And for those of us that are at midlife, what a blessing that we can finish well. And with that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Lisa J.R. Beatrice, oh, you're next. And then Lance L. will come in after you. Good morning, Beatrice.
Good morning. This is Beatrice O. from the Bay Area in California. Can I be heard?
Yep, I'll let you know.
Okay, great. So that paragraph that says, though there is no way of proving it, I just want to piggyback on what I think it was Steve that said, that it can be proven. And so that's what I needed for me to put the flour and sugar down. So I don't know, you know, it says they crossed the line or when it started, but I believe that I was a compulsive overeater. I had a predisposition, and from the time I was born, I was using food. So I had a lot of trauma, and so that attachment, emotional attachment, the trauma that I was going through, I needed that fixed. I needed that fix. I needed that food. That food actually saved my life. I don't think I knew it at the time, but that's what I used to survive. But instead of knowing that I had an addiction or that I was genetically predisposed to compulsive overeat, I just thought I was a fat, shitty, no willpower, terrible, fat person. And I hated myself for it. So that's what the That's what I had in my head. I didn't have any willpower. I couldn't lose weight. And when I did lose weight, I gained it back. So I had relapse after relapse after relapse before I got here. And even while in the program, I didn't believe that I could not eat flour and sugar. I thought that someday, one day, I would be able to. And so it had to be proven to me medically that I had this disease. They had to show me that in order for me to believe. Even though I had evidence, relapse after relapse, that proved that I couldn't, it wasn't good enough for me. And I just want to say that what food did for me was I was blind to this addiction, that it was a disease. I didn't believe that either, that I had a disease, and I certainly didn't believe I had an allergy. Fine. So I'm grateful today, and it's been proven, and I'm a grateful recovered food addict. Thank you.
Thanks, Beatrice O. Lance L., it's your turn, and then Nancy L. will come in after you.
Hi, everyone. My name is Lance L. I live in California, and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. You know, if you don't relate to the people who have been sharing on the line, or you think that, you know, it's your situation is a little bit different, and, you know, not every I is dotted, not every T is crossed, that's okay, because that's exactly how I came into here. You know, in this chapter, we outline a bunch of different stories about people who have not been able to stop, right? And they have different circumstances that lead them into taking that first drink, or after some period of time of having some abstinence, they again pick up those foods, or those in the book it's alcohol, but they pick that up again, being convinced that this is the right decision to make in the moment. I did not relate with people too much, and each one of our abstinence, each one of our recoveries are different, and there's a point of relation of everybody chiming in this morning and every morning that once started, we cannot stop. We have an allergy of the body, but that's not the most important part of our problem. The most important part of our problem is the thinking that pushes us back into it after being on a diet, after having something just catastrophic happen in your life where you're like, oh my gosh, I can't be doing this anymore. I mean, whatever the reason, the thinking that precedes the first drink is why we're here and we work the steps. If abstinence was my only, the only thing that I needed, man, I wouldn't be here. I wouldn't be talking on the line, but I have a mental state that parallels sound reasoning. You know, all my good judgment calls, everything that good choices that I make, the decisions that are very healthy, I have a mental state of alcoholism that is parallel to that. So sometimes I make the good decisions and other times I don't. And that's why I have this program, and we have a lot of people here that are supportive of what I do in my recovery. And you know, we're going to roll on through this chapter, and we're going to get into a story in the next paragraph that talks about a man who, after some period of time, picked up another drink. And it's remarkable to see these things, because this is alcoholism right here. So we have to remember where we are in the book. And we also have to remember that it's very important to reach out and talk about these things, because sometimes that's the only way we can let these things out. So I thank you for opening the lines and being of service, and take care.
Thank you, Lance L. Nancy L., it is your 3 minutes now, and then Elizabeth J. will come after you.
Good morning. Thank you, Mel, and morning, everyone. This is Nancy L., recovered in Arizona. Few alcoholics have enough desire to stop while there is yet time. That, for me, was the desire I had at 4 years old was to get on my bike, find pop bottles. Back in those days, that's what we drank out of, or soda out of, and get my nickel or whatever it was and spend it on candy. And so that was my desire, was to see how many pop bottles I could get, how much money I could get. Then when I went down to the little corner store, if I bought the candy and had change left, like pennies, because there was a lot of penny candy, I spent every penny. I think maybe a normal kid might say, oh, I'll save this for tomorrow. I never saved anything. I had to have it all. I had to have it now. And, you know, I found great joy back then and delightment in having what I had in my pockets to, you know, ride around the block and eat. It was just distorted from a very, very young age, what the food was doing for me. And then later on, of course, what the food was doing to me was devastating. And I'm just so very, very grateful today that I am recovered. It's only by God's hand, because I tried pretty much everything. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Nancy L. Elizabeth J., it's your turn. And then Maureen S. will come after you.
Oh, good morning, everybody. This is Elizabeth J. I'm in Massachusetts. I'm a compulsive overeater, and I'm glad to be here. I was on the line with you guys yesterday. It was my first Vision for You meeting. I was inspired, and I stopped complaining about the distance to OA meetings from out here on Cape Cod, and I did a 60-mile round trip to an in-person meeting. I was hoping to find a sponsor. It was a very small group. All the women were already filled up, but one woman has, I did send in my food to her last night, and I sent in my food today. I took a picture and texted it in. I have 6.5 years in another program, Clean and Sober, and I am struggling with the compulsive overeating, with the sugar and all these trigger foods that I just eat en masse, and they have horrible consequences that make me want to isolate, but I do it anyway. And I realized yesterday it was this blessing that came over me, this beautiful God-inspired gift of desperation, and I was compelled to get to that meeting and interact. And I'm driving home, and I stayed close to God, and I was grateful for the meeting. I'm grateful for our fellowships. And I said, I had a smile on, and I said, oh, this will just be an adventure. I'll just keep it simple, wear life like a loose garment. And then my habits are so deeply rooted and rutted into my pathways. I did okay last night for about an hour and a half. I had gone to the supermarket. I got my abstinent meal. I did. And then I came home, and it was all kind of confusing. And I think that's the main thing that I'm experiencing, is just a profound sense of confusion around food. I have been an addict for so much of my life. I was out there for 35 years with drugs and alcohol and food and anger and any other number of what I thought were coping skills. And I'm learning how to live in the world. I came into recovery at 48. I am ready to address the food. And I just say, God, keep me where I was yesterday. Keep me at that gift of desperation, a jumping off point, because anything that I've been trying doesn't work. It was so much easier for me to put down the drugs and alcohol. I was ready. They weren't working anymore. I had crashed. But the food, it's a whole different beast.
Time.
And in the, okay. Well, thank you so much, folks. Glad to be here.
Thank you very much, Elizabeth J. Maureen S., it's your turn.
Hi.
And then after Maureen, we might have time for maybe one more person to share. Hi, Maureen.
Hi. Oh, good morning. Thank you so much for your service. Maureen S. here, recovering compulsive overeater. I was struck by the sentence, the difficulty is that few alcoholics have enough desire to stop while there is yet time. I didn't have any desire to stop. I can remember, as many others can too, being very, very little and just loving, you know, food. And I use it as a comfort, but also it was when I was happy too. It was like any emotion was connected to the food. I was rewarded with food, you know, by the people in my family. And instead of like with authentic love, it was just with food. I have young memories of like the blizzard of 77, which was like, you know, a once in a millennium kind of a thing. And what my memory is the special treats that my grandfather brought home when he would work, you know, 24 hours in a row trying to remove the snow, which is crazy, you know, that that's the memory instead of like what fun game he might have played or, you know, other things that I would have loved being at my grandma who I loved very much. I remember that one specific food item. And that just really shouts to me now, looking back, like, oh, wow, I was really a compulsive overeater. As a young child, I was addicted to sugar and other carbs, which is, sorry, I got so many thoughts running through my head. I remember thinking this morning, I had a really tough day yesterday. I went to 3 meetings. My last one was at midnight, which was turned out to be such a blessing because there was so much open time. So it really helped me like bookend my day. I ended up picking up a small amount of food that was abstinent food, but I didn't eat it abstinently the day before yesterday. And just that small amount of food, not even my trigger foods, just totally messed me up after having 2 weeks of really solid abstinence. And it just tells me it's not about, at this point in the progression of my illness, it's not about just the food. I need to be abstinent from my binge foods, but it's also so much about the spiritual parts of the program. And I also had I woke up today still kind of feeling like, oh, I'm not going to be able to do this. Look at that. I had those 3 little bites, you know, and I was reminded that I'm not surrendering. I'm not giving over control to my higher power today. If I was, then I wouldn't be thinking about me and how, oh, I can't do this. And, oh, I'm miserable. And, oh, I'm a failure. And, oh, I'm going to stay fat. Me. When that, to me now I can see, okay, that tells me I wasn't surrendering to my higher power, because when I'm surrendered to my higher power, it's not about me. I'm not 100% focused inward, which is where the misery comes from, and then it leads to the desire to pick up food. So I'm so, so grateful that my higher power gave me that awareness and led me to this meeting. And I just want to close with, relieve me of the bondage of myself, that I may better do thy will. Because that just is the answer, relieving my bondage to myself, letting my higher power be in control. Thank you so much for being here. I'll pass.
Thank you. You're welcome. Thanks so much. We have time for someone to share for 2 minutes. Who would like to take that time?
Hey, this is Leslie. Melanie, can I take it?
You betcha. It's yours.
Thanks so much for your service this morning, Melanie, and to everyone behind the scenes moderating. And I just wanted to say that I'm Leslie. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Tennessee, and I wasn't aware of my compulsive overeating tendencies until I had my first child when I turned 30. And you know, I suppose I could have stopped, maybe, if I wanted to, but the thing is, you know, what I realized today is that I didn't really want to. I wanted comfort. I cared more, much, much more about my comfort level than I did my spiritual fitness. I could have cared less about my spiritual fitness and my connection to God at that time, because I had given up on God, and I thought that God had given up on me. But through the work of these 12 steps, I know that that isn't true. And today, my desire for spiritual fitness is greater than my desire for my own comfort, thank God. And so glad to be here with all of you. Have a wonderful day. Thanks, Mel.
Thank you so much, Leslie W. And that ends our sharing portion of this particular meeting today. Glad that you're all here for that. And I want to thank everyone that was in service and those that shared today. But we will now close with a reading from the Big Book on page 164, and then we'll follow that with a Serenity Prayer. So stick with us. We're going to have announcements and newcomers to be greeting. So Cindy D., would you please read Our Book is Meant to be Suggestive Only on page 164.
Good morning, Melanie. Thank you. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who's still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is a great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you.